It is Tacky Talk time for the first day of June 2023 with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy. How are you, Tacky?
Hey, it's good to see you and a happy June. It looks like today may be the first 90 degree day of 2023 if the sun keeps up today.
Yeah, we're launching into this is the start of meteorological summer, and it's going to feel like it.
Well, it's I think we all agree that winter has been kind of a mixed bag, and the spring was teasing us constantly about having some decent weather. So obviously Memorial Day weekend was quite nice, despite, you know, one slightly warmer day, but the rest of the days were comfortable. And, you know, Memorial Day parade was nice. It was not too hot, not too cold, not too much sun. I've not much as many parades as some of other electeds here. As you're all aware, elected officials tend to stay a very long time in Quincy. But I've marched in enough to realize, you know, what is a wonderful day to take a stroll. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. It was picture perfect. And it's great for the veterans, you know, because a lot of them are so on the older side now that it's great for them when the weather's nice. They can participate in it.
Absolutely. And this year we had a shortened route to Quincy Hall from the Quincy Credit Union, basically just down Hancock Street, because there's renovations going on at the cemetery this year. So cemetery's undergoing some renovations, so it kind of shortened the route. But at the same time, it was actually easier in many ways to get a crowd of parade watchers, which was great to see people come celebrate Memorial Day in the cemetery, because you just crowd into the Adams, can't think of it now, but, you know, the space in front of City Hall.
Common, yeah.
Yeah, the Common, Adams Common. It makes it a lot easier for folks to kind of gather around and hear the speakers and, you know, participate, as opposed to like the cemetery where you have to actually, you know, get into the cemetery, or you're watching at the bottom of the hill on the sidewalk. You got traffic going by, which can be a bit loud against the PA system. So, you know, pros and cons to it. I mean, you know, I do like being at the memorial itself. But if you're a participant, you know, at a parade route and, you know, want to listen more closely about, you know, what the people are saying, it can be a little bit trickier with the traffic down C Street, close to the bottom of the hill, and you can try to climb up to the cemetery area, but it is an incline. It can be tougher for older folks, as opposed to the flat center of Adam Common, which, you know, much easier, obviously, flat space. There's parking nearby on the side streets, as well as the garage. You know, obviously the MBTA parking lot behind whatever that building is that the mayor bought.
The Monroe Building, yeah.
Monroe Building and the Quincy Center space of parking, because since City Hall is closed, you know, you have all that available parking in addition to public parking. So that makes it easier if you're like, you know, have mobility issues. You can be much closer to the Memorial Day event and much easier getting out. So again, pros and cons, right? I mean, you know, it's wonderful to be at the memorial proper, but there are different kind of access challenges. Conversely, you're at City Hall, you're not really at the memorial and really kind of like taking in the whole sacrifice of our veterans and our veterans' families, where, you know, you have the visual and makes it more real. So again, pros and cons, but again, it was a wonderful day. It's good to see many folks, and a well done job by the city.
Yeah, absolutely. And May, of course, was also Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, and I know there were some events that that you attended.
Yeah, it's the double duty month, I think is the way to put it. You have two things going on at once. You know, the governor had a wonderful event at the State House, reading the proclamation. The Asian American Pacific Islander Commission had their annual awards ceremony and scholarship ceremony in the month of May. And House Asian Caucus held an internal briefing actually last Friday regarding the impact of mental health and Asian Americans and a lot of misconceptions associated with that issue. So, you know, some very quick examples. You know, we do have a lot of refugees in the state. I think many of you should be hopefully aware of that. This is a refugee destination, and they have a lot of PTSD and other mental health trauma from their home countries, whether it be surviving the killing fields of Cambodia, and more recently, you know, the evac of Afghanistan. And I think most of us can't relate to folks who are basically shuffled out of their homes and escaping death, basically. You know, they're going to kill you. Leaving everything behind, especially a country you worked and fought for, and now you got to leave. It's not the same as a U.S. troop pullout. It's not the same thing. You've been run out of your country. In the case of Cambodians, for example, I mean, they survived the killing fields. And those who don't know the killing fields, communist regime in Cambodia's solution to this issue was basically committing mass genocide. For lack of a better term, to a portion of the population. And many families were broken up, and many loved ones don't even know what happened to other loved ones. So it's hard for someone to understand that, mass slaughter of your family by your government because you're on the losing side, and how that carries over, not just to the generation you're in, but also can be transferred to your newer generations of children here as well. So, and of course, that Asian hate, Asian racism that caused a lot of first-time folks never seen this level of attacks on Asian Americans, trauma associated. And then we also have identity issues. I think people realize that society often dictates our identities and the challenge of different Asian ethnic groups to fit into today's world or any world. And, some of the challenges there and impacts on mental health. The Pew Institute actually had a very interesting study about how many Asian ethnic groups are impacted by identity issues. And some of it is very much societally driven, not by us. We didn't create these identity issues. It's general society around us. And then how do we deal with nonconformity of what society expects of us? So there's much impacts there. So it's an underserved population. It's underfunded and has underrepresented in terms of professionals. And coach, as I always say, cultural competency is a big part of healthcare. If you don't understand the people you're treating, then it's hard to treat them.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, to that point, locally, of course, as you're well aware, Quincy Asian Resources just recently celebrated their annual community banquet. And a big part of that was recognizing their now approved mental health counseling programs.
Yeah, to my knowledge, this is the first standalone mental health counseling program that serves Asian Americans as one of the demographics. Obviously, they can serve anyone under the license, but I mean, they will have a unique niche, especially with that group. And even then, as we kind of pointed out, I mean, there's a lot of different ethnic groups in Asian Americans. I just pointed out two, Afghans and Cambodians, actually both from Asia. So, that's just a small portion of the large ethnic groups. That being said, I'm aware that, various community health centers and, some of the small hospitals may have some clinicians, but no one's done an actual focus in on mental health. And this was a long project by Quincy Asian Resources. And, we're going to work our best to try to make it very successful.
Yep, absolutely. Folks should look into it if they have folks that would benefit from it or if they benefited from it themselves. It's a great resource for the community for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, what's going on Beacon Hill these days, Jackie?
Well, it's been a fairly quiet few weeks. I keep telling folks we front loaded in the House a lot of the big issues waiting in the Senate. We put in the Chapter 90 Transportation Bond Bill, which gives basically free money to cities and towns for roads and bridge work because the state picks up the debt. So it's free money for the cities and towns. And, we have the tax package that is a very broad tax package, which will impact middle and low middle income folks the most in terms of benefiting from the tax package cuts. We also sent over an economic development bill, which has some bonding components at the request of the governor, and also another supplemental budget, which includes funding for an MBTA. I mean, it's not going to solve the MBTA problems, but, try to help them out regarding some of the employment hiring issues. So, we have actually just four really big packages sitting in the Senate. And right now, all the committees, I don't even get to look at the committee hearing schedule on malegislature.gov, but the committees are hot and heavy right now on getting their hearings done. I have every intention to get my hearings done in 240 some odd bills before the end of July. So we're running a hearing nearly every, at least once a week, but sometimes two times a week or within 7-8 days of each other, depending on how we're going to get a hearing room. Half the battle is getting a hearing room for ourselves. I mean, Yeah, I think these logistics, you guys don't understand at home, the logistics of finding a hearing room to get our work done is part of it as well. I mean,
the State House is an old building.
Old building, four hearing rooms plus large, large conference room and a couple smaller rooms that could be kind of jury-rigged into a hearing room. But of course, we also now are recording and broadcasting this hearings on the internet, a pandemic holdover that we all thought was great and continue to do. So that's actually part of it as well as the scheduling to account for a simulcast transmission over the internet. So, you know, we're still battling some of those logistics, the committee staff and I, like, we got to find a space, but, you know, we will get our hearings done by the end of July. It gives us a breathing space to prepare for some more challenging hearings in the fall. It also gives us a breather to try to put more time into some bills that it's going to take more homework to do. Because right now our goal is try to get all the hearing packets, the summaries, brief the committee members and get the hearings ready to go. And it's in the committee testimonies. People still are sending us testimony. And you can send us testimony. Actually, every committee will keep taking testimony to the bill is dispensed with. So people who have an interest in any bill, doesn't matter what the bill is, you know, should definitely visit the malegislature.gov website, go to the committee the bill's located in and send an email through the committee, official committee testimony address. And the committees will keep taking stuff until the bills are dispensed with. So, you know, it's busy. It's just not like newsworthy busy. And, you know, but I did get some newsworthy. I made a little bit of TV time yesterday.
Yes, I saw you speaking about the so-called lifting of the happy hour ban.
Yeah, yesterday was our bills regarding retail alcohol. And one of the proposals out there is to lift the ban on happy hours. And for those who may not be aware, but I think everybody knows what a happy hour is. It's basically a time period in the evening or late afternoon to the evening to allow folks to sell alcohol at half price. Massachusetts is the only state that does not allow restaurants to sell discount alcohol. All right, dead spot. Anyway, so what does that mean? I'm from the generation, I'm a little older than people give me credit for, where you know, drunk driving incidences were occurring during rush hour periods into the, you know, not like late night 1 a.m. I mean, this was stuff was happening between like hours like 5 and 10. There was a huge push in the early 80s to ban discount alcohol.
It's basically how MAD, right, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, came about.
Yeah, those in our generation remember attending MAD seminars and speaking programs and guest speakers about drunk driving. You know, their officers were not that far away from that too, getting substance abuse. And then, you know, today is against, Mothers Against Destructive
Behaviors, I think, or
yeah, something like that. So it's kind of been brought into address, you know, not just substance abuse, you know, drunk driving, but also, you know, other types of destructive behaviors from young people against each other. And also, you know, adults should be aware of what to look out for regarding destructive behavior. So, you know, not surprising, the data does show that after the end of happy hours, while there was still, you know, drunk driving death incidences, they were gradually declining over time. And it does work. You know, as my committee staff and I keep saying, you know, alcohol is a controlled substance. It does kill. I mean, excessive consumption, and it's not even that excessive when you think about it. You know, depending on what brand of alcohol you're using, it doesn't take a lot to cause alcohol poisoning, impairment of decision making. And obviously, operating machinery, whether it be driving a car or large equipment or even a cutting knife, you know, impairs your dexterity and can cause bodily harm. Hence, it's why it's a controlled substance. And obviously, there's liability. Massachusetts does probably require a lot of liability insurance and liability on restaurants regarding alcohol serving, and also can be held responsible for over-serving. And, you know, people have, I think younger folks have like, treated this like, well, what's the big deal? I'm like, well, let me put this in perspective a couple of different ways. Let's say you have a two-hour window for happy hour. Let's say it's from the hours of 6 to 8, just for an example. And you're getting, you know, half-price alcohol, and it's unlimited number of drinks you can have. When you're approaching the last, you know, 15 minutes of happy hour, you're inclined to buy as much as you can before the last 15 minutes are out. And it'd be a shame to buy that alcohol at discount and not drink it all.
Hence the problem, right, for overconsumption. Yeah.
Another issue comes up is a battle to the bottom regarding restaurant industry. Restaurant industry does not like discount alcohol overall because it's a race to the bottom. So, you know, restaurants will start competing against each other regarding discounting alcohol pricing.
Yeah, it's like gas stations across the street from each other competing.
Exactly. But this is on a larger scale, right?
Right.
And because not surprising, you know, restaurants and alcohol serving tend to be in business districts. It's by design. It makes a lot of sense when you think about it. And then it becomes a race to the bottom and lowest price. And, you know, beverages, doesn't matter if it's soda, water, if they charge a bottle of water, you know, soda, bottle of water, as well as alcohol has a huge markup. So now it's a race to the bottom to try to figure out who can get the best mark down, and it becomes, it takes away their margins as opposed to, you know, doing pricing on against wholesale so they can kind of figure out what it is and compete against wholesale price. Because generally speaking, most restaurants in the same geographic zone should have similar wholesale price alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So it does create that kind of price competition.
Which yeah, actually, they get it from the same distributor.
Well, it doesn't make them more money. Because, I mean, if I sell you one drink, I get 10 bucks. But if I sell you two drinks to get 10 bucks, that doesn't actually improve my margins.
No, right, because it's costing you more to make the same amount, yeah.
Yeah, this is kind of the illogical argument that I find regarding this. It's like, well, I make more money. Well, you can sell four drinks for $40, or you can sell four drinks for $20, or you can have been drinking in the last hour because they're trying to get more purchases in the last 15 minutes, and then it becomes a bit of a headache.
It's penny-wise, pound-foolish, right? Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it really isn't cost-effective. Once you really run the numbers, I suppose you could get away with it in some ways, but then you're taking a high responsibility for over-serving as a restaurant.
And that can cost you millions. Never.
Yeah, there's a lot of liability there.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of the thing about happy hours. They don't talk about this in the papers because they all talk about how, you know, we're such a fudgy-dudgy whatever's.
Puritanical, I think, was the phrase, yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, it isn't that. I mean, you really look at breaking it down. We've grown accustomed to this economic model that works. And, this is a very low drunk driving state, and it isn't just because of one of the strongest drunk driving laws to take people's licenses away. It's a series of work from education, public awareness announcements, talking to kids at home, example, good behavior as parents and adults, being responsible drinkers and not creating incentives for people to be not responsible.
Yeah, and in fact, aren't some of the taxes from alcohol sales required to be used toward these prevention programs?
No, there was additional 5% sales tax that was repealed by the voters back in 2010. That would have dedicated that sales tax money. But, you know, they already have excise tax on your alcohol. So its sales tax was actually taxing not just the alcohol wholesale price, but also the excise tax plus wholesale was the sales tax on that. That actually is kind of crazy when you think about it. You're taxing on a tax. But, I mean, we do set through the budget a very large amount of money towards mental health and substance abuse programs. And it's something that's been gradually increasing throughout the two tens and into the 2020s. And COVID, no big surprise, COVID has actually continued to reevaluate the mental impact and substance abuse impacts associated with COVID. Because even though COVID's in this kind of like, waning stages, it appears, despite this new wave apparently in China that no one can figure out what's really going on. It doesn't just like go away, right? Let's say you suffer severe depression and you're taking opiates during COVID, that doesn't just end because things reopen. So we'll be seeing some fallout from the COVID mental health impacts and substance abuse for quite some years to come. The problem is everything's a 1 to 1.5 year data lag.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is a huge problem for public policymakers when you're dealing with data that's a year and a year and a half behind. Now we're trying to kind of guesstimate what's going on now based on past information, because it's not like real time. Like, I can't tell you how many people, you know, as of 5 minutes ago, right, you know, who's having, you know, substance abuse issues right now. You know, it's quantum data that's compiled in aggregate, and we can kind of like get the macro view that's happening.
Yeah. A part of the discussion, of course, also went to go alcohol sales, you know, whether that should continue post-pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, alcohol to go is continuation of pandemic rules. Basically, there is no rules, essentially, regarding how we take alcohol from restaurants. You know, there are limitations regarding bottle sizes and volume, and require, you know, demonstration of non-tampering, but indication seal was broken tape cover. You know, liquor stores are very concerned about the fact that you're going to be selling bottles of beer that could be bought, you know, at a liquor store. We do understand it's the markup, but, you know, people are people. You know, you're going to spend the extra trip, or you want to not spend the extra trip, right? And then, you know, obviously mixed drinks are a question for a lot of folks, not because of mixed drink, but also, you know, the container of said mixed drink to ensure there's no open container law violation, and ensure that's transport home. One of the biggest issues that I pointed out was delivery services and who's responsible for serving underage, or, you know, just kind of drop and run alcohol. You just leave it at the front door, and who's responsible what happens next?
Yeah, we just saw GoPuff get in trouble for that, right?
Yeah, GoPuff was tagged up by the ABCC, Alcohol Beverage Control Commission, on a number of stings. They basically had 100% failure rate on the stings regarding serving underage drinking and control of the alcohol. I mean, they didn't have control of the alcohol.
No, they were delivering to freshman dorms in Boston.
Exactly, controlling the alcohol, right? You should have turned away and passed up, you know, refunded their money as soon as you saw who was accepting the alcohol. They didn't control the alcohol. So, you know, that's a question too. And like Uber and Uber Eats and DoorDash and even your own personal delivery driver, I mean, what's the liability there regarding alcohol delivery? And GoPuff is a retail, by the way. They're not a restaurant, just to let you know. So they are self-delivery. Don't use a third-party delivery service, which actually adds that layer of problem they have. They have had all their licenses suspended and possibly being revoked. And there's currently a lawsuit with GoPuff regarding unfair treatment on enforcement of the alcohol laws. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to speak to whether they were fairly or not fairly treated. It's a pending legal case. And you know, yep. Some thoughts on these things, but you know, I'm the legislature and I don't interfere. But, you know, the regulatory agents are on enforcement. Now, you got the same problem with restaurants. I mean, this local enforcement will have to increase their stings on that. And the answer is yes, there have been restaurants that misbehaved. Mm-hmm. But the ABCC has been kind of hyper-focused on GoPuff and other types of retail distribution. But, you know, I can't get information from Uber Eats and other, you know, delivery services about, you know, have they been in compliance? Do you take a look? You know, how do you know it's not underage? You know, are you delivering to the right house? Hasn't been diverted and so forth, and how much liability restaurants will have. So, I mean, if we're going to move forward on alcohol continuation, alcohol delivery or a takeout service at restaurants, we do need a new regulatory structure. We do need a higher degree of accountability. And unfortunately, you're going to have to carry a higher degree of liability insurance that, you know, let's say, you know, something happens and a 16-year-old gets alcohol from a local restaurant and they get kind of, you know, drunk and, you know, does something stupid or someone gets injured. You know, it wouldn't have happened if they actually checked who was receiving the alcohol.
Right.
So,
it's a tough issue. And now with technology advancing, you know, fake identification is getting very, very realistic looking.
Exactly. And, you know, your delivery receipt service, you know, would need to meet the same services as if it was an in-person alcohol serving. So, you know, restaurants do check your ID at the restaurant, and liquor stores do have the ability to check at the liquor store as well. I mean, and obviously you've been to a grocery store. I mean, you know, those that grocery stores sell alcohol do not allow minors to sell the alcohol. They have to call an adult over. It slows down the whole line. People experience this, obviously, and they do ask for identification. Everyone's identification now. They want to be sure no liability, regardless of what you look like.
Yes, it's quite a compliment when I get ID'd.
It is for me too, actually. Especially in proper relief. It's as we get to a certain age, it's always like a compliment.
You
So
perpetually look 21, Jackie.
I just, it's a comparative issue, Joe. I mean, it depends who I'm standing next to, right?
True. Okay. We'll give you that. Although that's an interesting point. The drinking age back then was 18, right? In 1984.
I'm a little young in that for 1984, but yeah, drinking age was lower. But I mean, just because you add a few years to drinking age doesn't change the behavior responsibility.
Right, exactly. Yeah. All right, we'll see where that goes. Doesn't sound like there's a big appetite by you or your committee for that right now.
I don't have a large appetite for this issue, and I've not heard a clamoring from my colleagues in the House saying this is something that needs to happen for happy hours.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it goes a little bit more complex on this matter. And we have a chance for another reeval as we kind of extend this to April 2024 and to see how it goes. But, I've made it clear in the media, and I hope I made it clear in the media more than one time now that we're going to go forward. We need a new brand regulatory structure. And the restaurant industry has not suggested a regulatory structure. So I do know how alcohol works, guys, and I can think of a regulatory structure that creates some accountability. If you're serving to teenagers in your restaurant in person, you get bagged in a sting by the Quincy Police Department or ABCC. The licensing board, does slap you.
Yes.
There should be no difference if they give alcohol away at the doorstep of someone's home. You definitely should be equally slapped.
Yeah, you're doing it's the same violation.
That's absolutely correct, but it's an invisible violation right now because there's no way to verify.
Yeah. I want to talk about national stuff for a little bit. It looks like the US government is going to be able to pay all its bills.
Well, the art of compromise is not everyone gets what they want. And, not surprising to me anyway, Janet Yellen did extend the date a few extra days out. Tax receipts are not a consistent form of revenue for any government. Well, maybe local government. It is property taxes, but you still have to pay your property taxes. So, the schedule is there. But I mean, for income-based taxation, there's so many ways that people can delay payment. There's different schedules for estimated taxes. Corporations have different scheduling. In California, for example, for some reason, got a massive delay extension. I don't understand what happened there. I mean, it's a massive income tax state for the federal government because I don't know, 50 million people. It's such a probably 30 million odd taxpayers plus corporations.
Right. Yeah, that's a
So
big chunk of money. Yeah.
a big chunk of money, folks. I mean, there's some kind of like weird delay going on. I don't understand. But I mean, not surprising. Last week and a half or so, U.S. Treasurer, basically got better numbers of how much money was left, and they could pay up to June 5th. And thankfully, over Memorial Weekend, President's staff and the Speaker's staff was able to come up with a compromise that both the Speaker and the President found acceptable. And not everybody got what they wanted, but everyone can claim some type of victory depending on what your constituency looks like. Let's be
Right,
honest.
that's actually how government's supposed to work.
It is. Everyone gets a little bit and everyone loses a little bit, and you try to sell it to your constituency as a win.
And you move on, right.
You move on. And you all saw this week, I mean, the saber-rattling by both political parties, with them trying to satisfy their own constituencies regarding this, whether they were for and against the bill, was rather fascinating. The need to speak up on, accusing your fellow party members of, basically not doing the right thing. I'll be kind. It was kind of intriguing to watch. And you got, it's both political parties. And I mean, and again, I mean, they're all trying to satisfy constituencies as opposed to actually addressing the larger issue.
Yeah.
It's interesting. They all talked about these little elements of the bill that, hey, we lost this, we lost this, we lost that. And not really talking about the macro issue about all of us that what would happen if they didn't take this issue responsibly.
No, that never got into the realm of discussion. It was just purely along partisan lines.
Yeah, and again, not partisan, totally Democrat, Republican, partisan within each party's schisms.
Right.
So, I mean, the liberal wing of the party, the progressive party, is all about, you know, taking these benefits, you know, for folks who need to work. But it's actually not permanent. It is sunset. The other side, we didn't cut enough. But Medicare and Social Security is your lion's share of the federal budget, like a huge lion's share. Yeah. Now it's defense is next. And you got the people saying, well, you know, you're capping defense spending. You know, we're not going to meet our military needs. Congress can change their mind on spending next year.
They do it all the time.
They do it all the time. I mean, you know, again, I would make the same argument I did the last several weeks. House of Representatives, make us a budget, please. And then, you know, let the members debate it and then let it be debated in the Senate and let the governor veto the whole thing. If I'm saying the president veto the whole thing, right. Our governor can actually land a veto, but the president can't land a veto. You know, let the president figure it out from there. And, you know, take the next steps. I mean, off the Congressional Budget Office indicates the budget cuts are not as substantial as people think. It's about $1.5 trillion, I think, over the course of a decade.
Sounds right, yeah.
It isn't as much as people would like. And again, it doesn't touch Medicare, doesn't touch Social Security. It caps some spending and reduces the IRS budget.
Yes. Yeah.
We didn't realize the IRS budget was kind of like mangled over the last administration, which meant that people who didn't pay their taxes weren't getting caught fast enough. And I've heard complaints from my friends that if you're waiting for your refund, particularly if it was a substantial one, it's been largely delayed. Mm. So I love the fact that Republicans are like, let's cut the IRS. Well, you just heard businesses are waiting for a response to audits and also the refunds, and no one can get to the IRS because there's nobody working there on the phone lines. And the flip side, you know, crooks that are basically defrauding the government on taxation isn't getting caught and paying their fair share. So I find it incredible for a law and order party that encourages tax fraud and diminishes ability for businesses to get timely responses regarding audits and refunds. Ironic how that works, isn't it?
Yeah, of course, the spin on it is that, you know, there were going to be armies of IRS agents, you know, attacking and targeting the middle class for audits.
Oh, yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense, folks, right? Yeah, yeah. That defies common sense. It's, you know, to be honest with you as well, if you're middle class and you're not paying your taxes, that's wrong too, folks.
Right.
I mean, that's what I find ironic is that they're basically saying they want to protect tax fraud. That's the bottom line. I mean, oh, army of people attacking the middle class. So if you're middle class and you do something wrong, that's cool.
I know. It does boggle the mind. You're right.
Yeah, because the spin sounds good in four words, but you think about it and you're paying your fair share of taxes, the Republican Party ain't helping you out.
Right, because they're not going after people that aren't.
That is absolutely what they're saying. So, I mean, if you're a taxpayer, pay your fair share, you should be furious for Republican parties in D.C., basically allowing people to not pay their taxes.
Yeah, and if you're straight and narrow, then you have nothing to worry about.
Yeah, if you do it correctly, you got tax software, you got accountants, and there's error made, you know, you fix the errors.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, and I've not heard complaints about the Department of Revenue having issues getting refunds out. You know, this is not always perfect either. But I mean, the State Department of Revenue, you know, not heard a lot of complaints from my friends in business. They do complain there's some things that are not perfect. But I mean, the lion's share of my friends in businesses are just absolutely furious with the IRS for lack of response regarding not just refunds, but amendments to taxes, you know, getting the estimated taxes in, you know, all that other stuff that businesses do. To make sure they pay their fair share and be in compliance. And, you know, we've had constituent calls about the IRS. We just passed along to the federal delegation, you know, about refunds that have been missing for 2 years.
Wow, really?
Yeah, more than 2 years. Some people from the beginning of the Trump administration were still waiting.
Oh, my goodness. That's unacceptable.
Very much so. And it's an understaffing issue. And people know that during the Trump administration, some folks decided that this was not the government they want to work for because they were want to do the jobs. And yeah, I mean, you've all heard those stories. I don't have to repeat them. So Yeah, I just find this mind-boggling. The food stamp issue, I understand a lot of people's concern about, you do work. I mean, this is a state that requires you to demonstrate you're working to work to find a job to get unemployment benefits. A lot of people experience unemployment during COVID, so I probably don't even have to explain this to a lot of people listening here. But we do have a lot of requirements for you to receive unemployment. And I get that regarding SNAP benefits, but people also realize that a very large portion of the population prior to COVID was receiving that SNAP benefits, even if it's only like $20 a month, because food insecurity is not new. But hyperinflation has created an even larger level of food insecurity because inflation is well ahead of wage growth. So it's a real problem of different kind of food insecurity. And people who do have jobs, if you meet the income guidelines, can qualify for SNAP programs, which is if you feel that you are lower middle income or low income workers, you should look at the program, even if it's only for like $20. It's 20 more dollars in a hyperinflation period in a food security era. So it isn't like people walking away with like $50,000 a year SNAP programs. That's not how that works. It's income driven program. And yeah, you can have a job and receive a small SNAP amount of money. It's not like you have to be unemployed. So unemployment sitting at 3.4, we'll get nationally, which you see a new number this Friday or tomorrow, what the new unemployment number is. And then you're going to see the state probably around 3.2% unemployment, which is near max, considered maximum employment. And today's numbers from regarding new hires last month, not surprising with small businesses, new hires. I'm trying to remember the number, but I think it was like well over 260,000 new hires according to payroll data, which was only expected to be 180,000 for the month of May. So unemployment numbers continue to be down. It tends to be mid and small businesses still hiring in this job shortage period.
Yeah, be interesting to see how that impacts interest rates going forward.
Yeah, the Federal Reserve is very much still fighting inflation. Wage inflation is a big one. Again, I'm not against people making more money, but people making more money is built into the price of doing business. And businesses are paying more than the minimum wage. Much more than minimum wage now, which impacts a lot in small businesses that basically pass the cost along to you. Again, I'm not against people making money, but you all got to understand that minimum wage does not impact wage increase like market conditions we're facing today. And if the inflation, core inflation numbers, which is not including housing and energy and all the other stuff, groceries and how groceries, retail. All the other stuff you guys, all of us buys on a daily basis continues to be not going down fast enough. The Feds could jack up another 0.25% in 2 weeks. So you got a lot of unsettling things going on, right? The debt ceiling issue. You have OPEC meeting again because the price, they tried to cut production. It didn't quite work right for them to keep jack up the price of oil. You have continuation of strong unemployment going to seasonal unemployment. Summertime is a lot of seasonal employment. People are still trying to find workers. DCR needs lifeguards. So again, please visit the DCR website if you feel you want a summer job as a lifeguard. And I'm sure a lot of other places looking for just temporary help. We'll see, we'll see what the feds do because delinquencies have gone up on car loans, slow down on car sales because of high interest rate. Housing nationally is still strong only because of a shortage. And actually, part of this debt ceiling deal actually ends Biden's pandemic, a suspension of paying student loans this August, which means a whole lot of middle income folks are going to cut back on spending on consumer.
Their homes, yeah.
Yeah, going to cut back on spending consumer goods starting now.
Right.
Likely, as they prepare to continue paying student loans. Again, I still believe everybody should pay debts that you chose to get. But I also understand, during the pandemic era, that it was really tough. And now you're in a hyperinflation era where money's tight and you're going to have to continue your debt payments on student loans. So, yeah, so it's going to be a real tough economy for retail in particular. Retail, you're going to see a massive impact on retail overall, whether it be Costco's or BJ's or the tea shop down the street from you or or you know, even the discount dollar stores and TJ Maxx. And if you're a luxury brand, you know, I mean, I think middle-income folks are going to take a pass on luxury brands this year.
Yeah, just today, Macy's lowered their income forecasts, you may have seen. We just saw Bed Bath & Beyond, of course, file for bankruptcy. Home Depot is lowering their projections, so it's already started.
It's already started, yeah. I mean, Costco waved the flag of crisis mode with their company last week. It's Costco's. I mean, it's like BJ's, right? Those big box stores are favorites for middle-income folks. You stock up a lot of stuff at affordable prices, but that's, you know, that's going to be a tough year for retail.
Yeah, yeah.
I think restaurants will be okay at some level, yeah. But even inflation, I think the people want experience of eating out. People have an affection for the restaurants. I think they'll be all right. I think travel will be okay again because people booked a lot of their trips the first 3 months of this year. They've already committed. But, you know, I don't have high hopes next year. And even Vegas has already reported a declined revenue despite having a large number of bookings for rooms. Conventions are hot and heavy in a destination like Vegas, but overall revenue was down in May from March, despite maximum for their what they consider maximum occupancy. I mean, there's no such thing 100%, but for their calculation, maximum occupancy going into the year, the revenues are still down.
Yeah, so they're there; they're just not spending as much.
That's right. People are there, people are enjoying, but people are being very careful how much you spend at destination location. So that's a big warning sign because people were hoping hospitality at casinos would just be strong and heavy. And like I said, it's weird, right? You know, what you consider maximum capacity at a hotel and convention center, but they're not receiving more revenue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's the disposable income. They're keeping closer to the vest than they used to.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Man, my disposable income, you know, as you guys all know, I'm frugal. So I've definitely, you know, been packing the nest egg again. I'll be honest, folks. I mean, I've fled the treasuries. I mean, my interest rate in the bank ain't that good. You know, I took the opportunity to go to U.S. Treasury short term and not like I have a lot of money, but I'd rather get, you know, $4 a month interest than 4 cents interest.
Exactly. Yes. Yep, it all becomes relative.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not like I'm going to be a millionaire, but you know, I'll get several hundred dollars in interest that I won't get, you know.
Yeah. You try and at least keep up with, if not, you know, exceed inflation if you can.
Yeah. Yeah. And they can do it through U.S. treasuries, and U.S. treasuries are state tax free. You don't pay state taxes on U.S. treasuries, yeah. Short-term U.S. treasuries. So not like I'm telling you what to do financially. You guys can say what you do, but I made that decision. I looked at my bank account and realized I'm not getting any money of interest sitting there. The interest rate's so terrible. It's like, and you look at Fed's, you know, interest rates like over 5%, and you're looking at your bank account, it's not even cracking, you know, half a percentage. And I'm like, you know, for this time period, you know, I should do something with my nest egg money, my emergency money, and at least, you know, get, you know, maybe a couple hundred dollars or a few hundred dollars in interest out of it.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense for folks to just review their finances, you know, especially in this day and age, and educate yourself.
Yeah, and you guys all saw an SVB situation. Banking is a click of the button now. So if you guys, you know, want to shop around, I mean, there's no shortage of ways to look at the internet regarding whether it be online banks or brick and mortar banks that are trying to attract customers. And again, it's FDIC insured under $250,000. So you know, you shouldn't hesitate if you have under $250,000 deposited in another bank, but they try to maximize the interest rates or look at CDs. You can buy CDs nationally through brokerages. Brokerage companies let you buy CDs on a national level as well as U.S. treasuries. So again, you know, consult your financial advisor, have one. If you're very, want to play it super duper safe, which I like to, you can always just look, shop around for a bank and try to take advantage of a higher interest rate. Well, we still have higher interest rates. At some point, these higher interest rates will go down.
Yep.
But in the near term, why not make a few hundred dollars extra on an interest?
Yeah, so money markets are very safe, and even they're paying okay right now. So that's something to look into too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, no, at least I can't say what you do, but you know, It doesn't hurt to shop.
A local issue, Tacky, I'm sure you're aware of, although I know that they're not regulated by the state, is this Compass Medical Center closure. But it's private for profit, right? It's not a public entity.
Yeah, I didn't know about this. I saw the Boston Globe, and WBZ was reaching out to find out if I got phone calls from folks, and I checked with the office and I checked my email, and we didn't see any constituent contacts, no contacts from the company to tell us this. So I'm a little surprised on this June 1st morning about what happened. If I remember correctly, Compass was actually part of the old Quincy Medical Center on the top floor.
Yes, it was a Steward Healthcare, I think, initially, and then they broke off, but kept some kind of a partnership going. And then there was a lawsuit, and Compass lost and owes Steward all kinds of money.
Well, if I remember, the Patriot Ledger article indicated that Compass sued Steward for like $80 million.
Yes.
And during the course of the case, the judge discovered that Compass was defrauding Steward, which is actually pretty interesting,
yeah.
like TV drama, I'm suing you for $80 million, and the judges look at your stuff as like, you're actually defrauding the people you're suing.
Right.
And, they want to hook the $16 million to Steward. And of course, there's an appeal process, and people, the company is trying to, appeal the process and all that stuff. And, obviously they lost the appeal, and Compass has to pay Steward $16 million, which clearly they don't have $16 million.
Which is, troubling in itself, because that's not a whole heck of a lot of money for a big healthcare organization.
That's what one would think, right? I know the margins are tight in healthcare. I do understand that. But, you think you run a well-run company, particularly a for-profit business where you have investors.
Right.
You would have to protect investor money. That's part of your job as a for-profit corporation. You're protecting investors' investment. And that clearly didn't happen. So, and they're not DPH regulated because of the nature of their business, which I'm trying to remember. I think they do rehab.
I believe that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of rehabilitation work. So they're not actually DPH oversought. I think that's a question for the Public Health Committee to look at some point about what regulations we should do on these for profits that don't have DPH oversight. Because I know certain assisted living facilities don't have a lot of DPH oversight, which we discovered during COVID was a huge problem.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm waiting.
One closed during that time. Yeah.
We did. We had one right down here, Quincy Rehab on Washington Street. So I don't know what's going on. I'll be watching the news and wait for DPH to get to the delegation some more information what's happening. I'm sure many customers are now in a lurch.
A lot of them, that was their primary care physician. They have all their medical records with that company. So it's concerning for sure.
It was very concerning. Again, I think people should not construe this as a universal problem. They defrauded Steward.
Yeah, you might not want to do business with a company that's defrauding another company.
Let's not paint this as a problem with their healthcare model. Yeah.
Obviously, it's not the physicians or the staff or the nurses. It's the corporate entity.
Absolutely correct. So let's not cast aspersions on the entire industry on one company that chose to defraud another and paid a very stiff price, which clearly they can't pay.
We'll talk before the Flag Day parade. Yes, probably.
Yes, I will not see people doing graduation, so I do wish North Quincy and Quincy High School students much success and a wonderful future ahead of them. I have a medical procedure next week that will prohibit me from attending graduation season. I'm kind of sad I'm not going to be able to see all the students and celebrate with them on the field at Memorial Stadium. But I have a medical issue I have to address early next week. And it won't be up to sitting in the sun, I'm just saying.
Right. We'll have it on live here at QATV for both high schools. And then, of course, the big Flag Day parade.
Yep, Flag Day, I believe, is next Friday.
It's next Saturday.
I'm sorry, Saturday. Flag Day is the 14th. Official Flag Day is Wednesday.
Oh, that's right, yes.
But I believe Saturday 10th of June is going to be Flag Day. So yeah, we'll chat again before Flag Day. I will be up in Adam by Flag Day to see everybody. I'll probably still be a little bit messy, but I'll be up in Adam for Flag Day and enjoy.
All righty. In the meantime, how do we get a hold of you, Tacky?
You can call me at 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. I've been informed the phone system's changed again. So if we do not get someone picking up the phone right away, please wait, because it actually goes through the list of all the people that in my suite. So do stay on the phone, because I've already heard from folks that they've heard Jerry Parasella, Representative Parasella's office, come up first, because it's technically his suite in terms of the way the committee set up. And people kind of hung up after hearing his name. So, so we do have someone that actually does pick up the phone now. It's just, if it's busy, can't get to pick it up all the time. And of course, people need to go to the bathroom, they have to get lunch, it's that's what you do. Sit on the line to get past all the different folks in the suite. That's all.
Okay.
Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. Receiving a lot of emails and testimony. If you end up sending me testimony, I'll definitely forward to the committee in mailbox, because we have an email box just for committee testimony. But obviously, reach out if you got a personal problem. We'll see if we can help. Maybe we can, maybe we can't. But, we actually do review and try to do them all. If it's testimony on legislation, I do file those away. I do read them. So I do know what people are thinking. I can't always remember every name that comes through, because it's a lot of them. I do pay some attention. State Representative Tacky Chan, a Facebook account, as we talked about, we can see pictures of me doing this, that, and that thing. And at Tacky Chan is the Twitter account, which again, you can see us doing stuff. And of course, MELegislature.gov, which I talked about earlier, not just legislature's website on bills, but also public hearings. And we got TackyChin.org, which is more of a resource site, not really a official government site, because it's complicated. I have to maintain a separate website for reasons that the Ethics Commission requires me to do. It's a whole thing. So there's no shortage of ways to check out what's going on with me, and obviously plenty of ways to reach me.
Excellent. All right, Tacky, appreciate it. Always a pleasure to talk to you, and we'll check in again next week.
That's right. Have a wonderful weekend, and I'll see you next week.